we produced the book quite a number of years ago with the cotton guys down in New South Wales, and bringing it into the 21st century, I suppose, with an app is something that I never in my wildest dreams thought would have happened. So I guess the idea of having an app means that, you know, it can be something that's sitting on everyone's phone rather than having to have a hard copy of a book sitting on the dashboard of the ute or the tractor or whatever. You know, and being electronic, you know, you can just tap your bird photo and it'll give you descriptions, and it also gives you an opportunity to start recording a database, whereas with the book you had to, you know, have a pen and paper handy somewhere if you actually wanted to write down the birds that you found.
The book to the app, was that much of a leap? Were you involved in that process?
I didn't have a lot to do with the actual converting it over to an app. That was done by the Cotton Info people, and Stacey Vogel drove that process very nicely. I basically came in relatively late in the process just to proofread some of it and make sure that the original intent of the book was maintained in the app. I think it's come up trumps, actually. It's a great little product for people to have an electronic version of a bird guide in their pocket all the time.
And so, Greg Ford, how does it work?
So it's basically a guide to the 100 or so most common birds that you're likely to find in the cotton-growing regions. And so if you're just interested to know what the birds are that you see as you're driving around the paddock, you can pull out your phone or whatever you've got in your pocket with the app on and, you know, look for the bird that you're looking at. But it's more than just a guide to what the birds are in your landscape. There's a whole bunch of information in there about some of the indicator species of birds that can actually tell you what's going on in your landscape, whether you've got healthy landscape or perhaps otherwise. And in terms of that healthy landscape, there's a set of guidelines in there about maintaining good habitat for birds. We all know that, you know, birds are nice to look at and have in the landscape. I don't think anyone doesn't appreciate the birds they see in their landscape, but they can tell you a lot about what's going on. And there's a lot of information in here about, you know, maintaining that sort of good quality wetland habitats for those birds that like those habitats, and the more structurally complex or the scrubby habitats that favour things like a lot of the fairy wrens and those little bright coloured gems that we see out there, that if you don't have that more messy, I suppose, habitat, you often don't have those things in the landscape because they require lots of cover and lots of places to hide.
You mentioned fairy wrens. What other common birds would people see?
I guess the most common things you're going to see, and most people will be familiar with, things like your topknot pigeons, and, you know, you'll get lots of wetland birds around the water storages, of course, in cotton country. So, you know, people will be familiar with all the pelicans and swans and the various species of ducks, which are all in here, and the tall wading birds like the egrets and that wander around the edges. And some of those guys, you know, often you get ibis associated with wetlands too, and ibis is a well-known predator of grasshoppers and, you know, grubs and things in crops. So some of these birds perform a really good service in terms of their pest control potential.
And mutually beneficial. What would be a rare find?
In terms of wetlands, there's a bird called the Australian Painted Snipe, which is endangered at national level. It's pretty much restricted to the Murray-Darling Basin region, and it turns up sporadically. You know, it's one of these things that just, when the conditions are right, when the right wetlands have got the water in them for the right amount of time, they'll just turn up, and they can turn up in big numbers in places. In the northern part of the basin, it's a species that I've never actually seen. I think I may have seen one once in the Lockyer Valley many years ago, but it was a fleeting glimpse of a bird that disappeared behind a heap of vegetation. But they do turn up around, and they'd be the sort of thing that it wouldn't surprise me at all that would turn up in cotton paddocks when they're flooded, if some of the natural wetlands are actually wet as around as well. So
the capacity for farmers then to feed back, is that an
absolutely
avenue?
That's I mean, just monitoring what birds are on your place can give you a lot of information about what's going on in terms of your management. You know, there can be some really positive feedback there, but sightings of things like those rare birds are really important for the conservation of those species. And you know, seeing a rare bird on your place doesn't mean that someone's going to come and take it over and turn it into a national park, of course, but that sort of information becomes really, really good information for the people that are trying to conserve the things, in terms of what information they can then provide back to the community as to what's going wrong or right in the landscape that might or might not be helping those birds.